Spencer Haywood has joined us here on Sports Byline USA. Spencer, I'm looking at a picture of you. You have an NBA Cares T-shirt on, and you're holding your gold medal. Tell me what that gold medal means to you.
Well, the gold medal means an awful lot to me, Ron, because it was my verification that I am an American citizen, even though I was living in America and I had won a Class A state championship in high school, and I was an All-American in high school. But I came from a segregated part of the South in Mississippi. So, and I went to my last 2 years of high school in Detroit. So I had all of the things, but I still was something missing, you know. And so there, all of a sudden, I found myself in. And for those people who were in Mississippi who were segregated, the whites and the blacks, they had something they can rally around. My hometown gave a parade. It was just really, you know, it was big-time stuff.
I remember correctly, and correct me if I am wrong about this, going back to 1968, aside from what was happening on the civil rights front down there with Dr. Harry Edwards, that whole Olympics was up in the air to some degree. There had been riots had there not been down in Mexico, and they were concerned about the safety of the United States athletes. And also, if I remember correctly, there was a lot of protesting outside the hotel where the American athletes were, and trying to get some sleep was awfully difficult as well.
That was terrible. And also, you know, when we arrived on the plane and started coming in from the airport, they were mopping the streets up. Because the riots, I think it was nine people were killed in the riots in Mexico City, and they were wiping the blood up, and they were painting the buildings, getting it, you know, kind of cleaned up. But you could see it, you could smell it, and it was like, whoa, what are we into? But, you know, we were just thinking one thing, and we had one thing only on our mind, and Hank Iber had, Coach Iber had really instilled that in the USA Olympics and Basketball Committee was, you know, whatever you do, we cannot lose this Olympics, and we cannot lose it to the commie Russian bastard Russians. So, I mean, we were just tunnel vision, believing that, I mean, whatever happened, we could not lose this to an Eastern Bloc country. We just can't do it. We're not going to be the first to do it.
You lost, you did not lose, but you beat Yugoslavia in the championship gold medal game 65-50. And as you pointed out, you were unbelievable from the field. You shot 71.9% from the floor, and you were named the MVP. You averaged 16.1 point a game. And I'm just wondering, that championship game against Yugoslavia, tell me a little bit about it.
Well, my stomach was getting me in trouble. I ate some food outside of the commissary, and I had Montezuma's Revenge, that's what they call it.
Right.
Well, down south they call it the runs. But anyway, during the game, you could see me running from the floor after a basket was made straight into the locker room. Plus, I was throwing up, you know, because Howard Cosell kind of threw me a wrinkle beforehand because he was saying, you know, now that you made it to the final, I mean, you got millions and millions of people are watching you. I said to him, you mean millions of people? You mean Detroit is watching and Mississippi, the people in Mississippi are watching this? It's on ABC. Come on, Spencer, you got to get ready. And what do you think about it? You know, if you lose, it's going to be the world is coming to an end, blah, 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 blah. So I was just sick all day, and Coach Iver got so angry at him. He told him, you can't even come to the locker room. You can't even so I was being a kid again. So
yeah, you once said that the civil rights movement was about fighting for equality, so why should we give up equality in one of the few areas where we had battled for it and earned it? And when I read that quote from you, Spencer, I've known you for a long time, I thought 18 years old, and here is a kid that is showing that sort of forethinking. Tell me a little bit about how you came to that realization.
Well, you know, when I came up from Mississippi, I was t- taught to read everything, to go to all of the meetings, to go to any rallies and everything. So I just listen and learn, and I read everything that was nailed down because I was actually learning how to reread and learning how to read again and learning how to think. So I was around thinkers and believers and conversationalists, you know, there in Michigan. So it was just... It was more of a natural thing because I was taught that way by my mother in Mississippi, you know.
You were caught in the middle in a sense, were you not? You had, you know, the people on the one side saying that you should support this movement. On the other side, there were two Olympic athletes that were leaning on you a little bit as well, Wilma Rudolph and Willie White. What did they say to you?
Well, they just reminded me what I was doing before I got to the Olympics, you know. And, you know, like if you mess this up and mess this up for this country, you will be picking cotton again. And I was like, picking cotton again? I don't want to ever do that. So they were just a stable and influence around me. And both of those girls are from Mississippi. So I took their word as gospel. And plus, I was in love for the first time in my life.
I know the other thing that you
Willie White, yeah.
Yeah, I know the other thing that you said, and I thought this was very poignant as well. You said, I didn't feel great about not being involved in the protests, but I cried when the Star Spangled Banner was played. And I sensed from what George Foreman has told me about his moment standing in the ring with the little American flag in his hand, you guys shared that same opinion.
We shared that opinion because George would always tell me, you know, I'm in this. I think it was a Boys Hope or something in Houston. He was not in a home. He didn't have a home, no one at home for him. And so I was similar because I was a road warrior. I had traveled from Mississippi on my own to Detroit to get an education and play basketball because I couldn't play there. And so, you know, being an American, you can rise to any level in this country that you want to. In fact, you look at what's happening right now. You look at the presidency. I mean, you can just arrive at anything here. You can. It's nothing like America. And I hear people talk about it, you know, you can't do this. Man, there's nothing like it. I was telling you earlier, Ron, about Russia. We didn't have food. And they was telling us, you know, you guys should be playing for America because the black man is being oppressed. And I was like, you can't order pizza. You don't have a burger. You got us eating horse meat, and you're telling me I'm eating steak? What am I going, you know, come on, dude.
There's another thing, too.
Nothing like America.
There's another thing I want to ask you about. I know for the 2 weeks during that tournament, the Olympic basketball competition, the Mexican fans booed you guys. But when you won the gold medal and you received, tell everybody what you received from the Mexican fans.
Well, what I received is like, I guess it was a 3 to 5 minute standing ovation, and when they called my name and put that medal on, because they just fell in love with this young boy that's so innocent, and I just loved everybody, you know, and I loved them up. I was never, you know, I mean, because I was in Mexico basically down in Mississippi because, I mean, I did all of the cotton picking. I worked at the golf course. I did all of those things, so... to me, I was like, well, this is home. So we played so hard and did so well down there that they just fell in love with this whole idea, and they fell in love with this young kid. I mean, and you can't explain it other than it was a spiritual thing, Ron. It was way beyond me or the Mexican fan base that we had at that time because we had a serious fan base. When we first started, it was kind of weak, but by the end of the gold medal rounds, we were like the hottest thing in Mexico City and throughout Mexico. So
we got about 45 seconds left. When you came back to the United States, what was your life like after you had won the gold medal?
It was just great. I mean, coming back to Detroit, it was just super. And then having the pleasure of going home. I didn't go to the parade, but I did go home to Silver City, Mississippi, and throughout all through there, the whites that I kind of feared, they embraced me, and it was just it was a unifying moment for me for America, you know? So So I'm just grateful that I had the opportunity to do something for my country.
Spencer, I want to thank you. We've known each other for a long time, but I wanted to talk to you about this aspect of your life. We have talked other times about your years in the ABA and the NBA, but this was something that I wanted people to understand, you know, how you were caught in the middle and how you stood up in the end for what you believed in. Thank you, my friend. Take care and come back and visit with me again here on Sports Byline.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for all your good work you're doing.
Spencer Haywood with us again. He was a member back in 1968 on the United States Olympic basketball team. A lot of the big names didn't try out because they didn't want to be involved in the protests that were going to be taking place down in Mexico City, but he was only 18 years old, becoming the first teenager to ever play in the Olympics. We continue with more of you at America's Sports Talk Show.